Welcome to the Electrified Podcast. I'm Matt Teske, and I'm here with Joe Boris, and we're here for episode 102. Today we're going to be talking about new battery technology from Tesla, a new racing series that is definitely different, and also e-bikes, where they're headed, and some new vehicles coming out from our friends across the pond. Let's get this going.
All right, so this is our episode 2 of the Electrify Podcast. I'm here with Matt Teske. Obviously, I'm Joe Boris, and we've got a lot going on, and Tesla has just put out a million mile battery. Now, Matt, is this something that they've put out, like they're going to start production of it, or is this just like a patent thing? What's going on here?
Yeah, it's more patent related from everything they've released. It's just, but it's a step in a direction where I think Elon's quote was something to the effect of, it doesn't sound exciting, but this is more important than it seems, because if they've been able to accomplish what the patent and what they're describing is saying, it's going to really simplify production. It could also help with respect to just the cycles the battery can go through. Again, it's getting to that stage where we're going to have the technology underneath the car in that battery pack that's going to allow people to go the distance in a way that they keep saying they want.
Yeah, because it looks like, I mean, from what I've seen, it looks almost like a AA battery, right? And they can arrange these things in all kinds of different weird shapes and fit them into packages that, you know, previously you just had like the big skateboard kind of battery, which is like a flat battery pack between the wheels. And this would really let you do some more design stuff. Do you think that that's a big hurdle? I mean, do you feel like people who are shopping electric cars are looking at them and saying, how long are these things really going to last? Am I going to, you know, own this thing for 250,000 miles? I mean, nobody really buys and drives cars that long, do they?
Well, yeah, again, it's kind of that the mentality of, you know, what is my total cost of ownership? And, you know, that phrase gets thrown a lot, you know, around a lot with electric cars. I think the most important element of what Tesla's showing here, and frankly, the battery packs that they do have are designed based off of this methodology. They don't use sheet design battery cells. They actually use the cylindrical small size that, and they interweave them with thermal management that allows them to really maintain, you know, I think a better level of the heat and cold that goes on with the battery pack. So this is actually a step further in the current design that they have. So I think the biggest element that you're looking at is just is how it's the final cell is constructed. And I think that, well, the questions then start coming up of, is this the new best, better battery, that million mile battery? If it's talked about enough in the media, sure, I think it will come up that way. I think that they're still, I mean, as for where they are with production, we'll know more on their battery day that's supposed to come, you know, this month. So we'll see exactly how they can come up with a better talking point related to what GM maybe announced, you know, a few months back on their battery day.
I remember that. Yeah, that was, man, that seems like it was years ago, but it was like in January, right? It was like CES or something.
Yep.
And yeah, and that was, yeah, for those of you who missed that, that was General Motors put out like 10 electric concepts on the same day, a couple Cadillacs, a new Hummer, that kind of thing. And it was huge news. And then, you know, global pandemic.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think that they still have some news coming out related to the cars they talked about a few months ago. But to your point, it feels like it was forever ago.
Are they building cars right now? I mean, are they?
Yeah, are they? I mean, well, I mean, there's a lot to talk about with respect to who's got automotive factories open this week. So we'll get to that.
Yes. So is that the same topic or is that a different topic? I think what we're alluding to there is, you know, we're in the middle of this nationwide shutdown. A lot of car companies aren't making cars. A lot of businesses are closed. A lot of restaurants and theaters and things like that are shut down across the country. And Tesla, the company we're talking about now, is kind of going against the orders of the state, and they've reopened one of their California factories, it seems.
Well, it's interesting too, because, you know, the county of Alameda effectively said, you're not doing it. And what it looks like is that, you know, Elon, I don't want to say he called their bluff, but at the same time, you know, he set himself up to be a martyr, and then it didn't happen. And I think that now that they actually have people at the factory on some level, he basically said, if you're going to come arrest somebody, arrest me. Again, there's a lot of different approaches and talking points that come along with what's going on right now from a, you know, public health perspective, from an economy perspective. I understand where he's coming from, saying that there's other states that have factories open, but candidly, it's hard to reference a factory in Alabama or Tennessee compared to the Bay Area when you're thinking about population density and just a lot of different factors. So people want to get back to
work. You're mentioning factors, but you know, you talk about Alabama, you talk about North Carolina or South Carolina, where a lot of these other factories are. That's a really different a political landscape than what Elon is dealing with here in the Bay Area, right? Because, like, I mean, a lot of those people out, you know, I'll say down south, out east, whatever, however we want to describe it, you know, they're still thinking this thing's a hoax. We've got people saying, you know, let us go get a haircut, which for those of you who can't see Matt, Matt's waiting.
Oh my gosh. The coif that I have on top of my head, it is something to behold. This is what we do need the video podcast, but yeah. As much as I know I need a haircut, I'm not actually going out protesting, begging for one. But at the same time, no, you make some good points. Is that there's the landscape of each of these geographic locations comes with their own issues. And I think for Elon's sake and for Tesla's sake, they have some automated processes they could have back up and running with no issue, I think. But you know, at the end of the day, he's been pushing from day one to say this wasn't going to be a big deal. And obviously, it's not really painted that way with respect to the problems that have occurred and the people that have, you know, they've gotten sick and died. So I think there's a balancing act we play here. I don't think it's fair with respect to, like, even some of the political discussion happening. I think there was one of the representatives from the state, or I forget which political official stated it, but tweeted it basically saying, you know, F Elon. And I was kind of like, all right, well, that's not constructive either, you know. So
he needs to hear it, though. He could stand some humility, I guess.
Oh, criticism all day. I mean, there's plenty of things like that he said. It's like, well, that tweet didn't age well. But, you know, it still has to be to a place where, what are we talking about? We're talking about getting people back to work. Yes, but they got to be safe. So if we've crossed,
they got to be safe. But I mean, I think that's an unfair. I am no champion of Elon Musk. But, you know, for all his criticism of the plans and everything surrounding the pandemic, I mean, you know, he has been buying the ventilators and he has been buying medical equipment and he has been producing medical equipment and developing that stuff, you know, with his factory. So I think it's unfair to say that he doesn't get it. I think he just doesn't. I think he just kind of thinks that he can manage it, which may be more dangerous, right?
Right. Honestly, if you look at how he approaches everything he does, it's very binary. You know, he looks at it. He looks at it in a way and says, okay, let me look at the data and what do I see from the data. And so he's gotten some criticism from a lot of people saying, you know, for as much as he's focused on science and engineering, you know, how is it he's punting on what the scientists are saying related to this health issue? And I think he's the type of person that looks at it and says, what's the national population? How many people are ill? How many people have passed away from this? Let me see the data. I don't think it's a threat. You know, and that's, again, if that's how he's thinking of it, which I think arguably could be that, then it's in line with how he approaches things. That being said, it's a different animal because we're talking about human life. And there's some nuance there. I think what's interesting too, though, is that even some of the backlash that's been coming from some of the commentary amidst what's happening right now is there are some purists, some Tesla purists that are not happy with Elon for how he's approached a lot of this stuff. And there are people saying that they've changed their opinion of the Tesla brand because of some of this stuff. Now, that it'll all bear out in the numbers for where their sales are at. I think it'll be interesting to see who gravitates to Tesla that may have looked at them as an elitist liberal brand that might say, hey, this guy's about getting the nation back to work. I like that car now. You never know.
No, you don't know, do you? And that's a really hot take on that, because I wouldn't have thought of that. We talked about some of the ways that, you know, COVID-19, the pandemic that is sweeping the planet, killing people, is affecting car sales, and obviously car sales are down, but it's impacting everybody. And here's the thing, not everybody is being hurt by this. Electric bike sales, pedal bike sales, electric car sales through the roof. What do you got for that, Matt?
Well, I don't know if all of it is through the roof. There's certainly numbers showing that some are down. I think the electric bike element, though, is interesting, is people are gravitating towards other options that they may not have thought of before that are still better than what they may have known. So instead of, like, just hopping on the bike, you can hop on an electric bike, and instead of having to buy a new car, you're having this option where there's less cars on the road, so you can take advantage of these new things. And so I think that speaks to, is it a shifting landscape for what's happened and it's going to be permanent? I mean, I don't have a crystal ball, but it's definitely changing people's minds.
Well, you have situations like in Seattle where they're talking about closing down 20 miles of road in the center of the city to make it for pedestrians and bikers. You know, London obviously has been doing that, streets here and there. Barcelona has been doing that. So we're talking about major cities here. So I think there's some permanence to it. The other thing that I should bring up is I in the last week or so, I actually rode a pedal assist bike for the first time in like, I want to say 20 years almost. And it was trippy, man. I mean, I was going like 30 miles an hour because we have one of those things where, you know, you drive by and it goes, your speed, 28.
You're like, I'm hauling. This is awesome.
Yeah, and I was like, dude, I'm spitting because it's like a 25 mile an hour zone. So I was really excited about
it. Well, and that's the thing is I think a lot of people, it's the same narrative we hear a lot of the times about anything electrified. If you haven't actually ridden an electric motorcycle, an electric bicycle, been in an electric car, you simply don't really understand what it can do for performance. So if you're just thinking you're going to hop on a bike and all of a sudden you're pedaling along and you're like, whoa, I'm actually moving way better than I thought I could. Again, it's you got to see it to believe it and drive it or ride it to know it. So I think maybe that's part of what's going to happen too is there's going to be cities making these decisions about what's happening with the roads. Then you have people that are making these decisions about how they're changing how they move. There's going to be a lot more conversation about it, which is a big part of what makes people move with their wallet.
Yeah, and I think it's worth noting that like if you're buying, you know, a high-end, I mean, not even super high-end, but if you're buying like a Specialized or, you know, a Trek mountain bike or you just something Cannondale, you know, you're spending a couple grand as it is. So the jump from like a, you know, $2,000 Specialized to a $2,400 e-bike is not a lot. You know, and especially like we were talking about before, you know, in terms of generational thing, if you can afford $2,000 on a bike, you can afford $3,000 on a bike.
Yeah. Well, then you're into a buyer's category that, yeah, it's negligible for what you may or may not buy at that point. Then it's like, well, if I'm going to spend a certain amount of money, I'm going to get the best I can get or features that you may not even thought you wanted. And you can take advantage of that. I'm still curious to see exactly, again, is there going to be a backlash with some of these city decisions for saying they're going to be closing certain streets and making more pedestrian and bicycle friendly? Time will tell on that too. Here in Portland where I'm based, they're making the same decision on certain corridors being again sectioned off to be more commuter friendly for, you know, cyclists and for pedestrians. So it's not surprising that it's happening this way. I think it'll be interesting if this can be sustained. I think especially in cities like Seattle and Portland, weather permitting, some of these options are just simply not viable all year round. But in other places,
are you saying Seattle doesn't have great year round weather?
I'm just pointing out that sometimes it feels like it's like watching that dog hang its head out the window that's got the big tongue and the saliva is just like flying behind it. Mm-hmm. It can feel like you're behind that dog sometimes in cities in the Northwest.
And you're saying that's not desirable.
I'm saying it's probably less than desirable.
We've got Dutch e-bike manufacturer Van Moof, which sounds like something you shouldn't be able to say on TV. They've been up over 50% and, you know, visits to their website seems like they're up 80%. We've got an e-bike retailer called Electric Bikes in Arizona. They've been up 140% this year. And, you know, I've been seeing that here locally. You know, as dumb as this sounds, I went to the Super Target to buy groceries. They had no bikes. And I'm not even talking about electric bikes. They just had no bikes.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I was on Amazon. I was like, oh, look at two or three different bikes. They're sold out. So, I mean, I think that's just, it may not be a permanent thing, but it's certainly, I think, going to be an interim thing where we get back to going, you know, and Twitter released a thing today that they said they may not bring back their offices. They might just let everybody work from home.
It's so fluid right now for how things are going to go. And on top of which, we're leading into a time of year where people do want to be outside more. So some of these decisions they're making with respect to things like electric bikes are being bolstered by the fact that we're going into better weather. They want to be outside more. I think there's a lot of things leaning them into those decisions. So,
and there's Rad Bikes. So Rad Bikes is a company that advertises very heavily on Facebook and social media.
You mean Rad Power Bikes?
And, you know, they have conveniently offered their entry level model at about $1,200, which we know everybody has $1,200, right?
I think that's brilliant, frankly, from a marketing perspective. I mean, hey, honey, do you say you got your check? Oh, fantastic. Oh, mine? I got a bike. I have a dollar left over.
Right. But, you know, there's a lot of things you can buy with a dollar. You can get one of them Doritos Locos Tacos. Those are all right. Are we done with electric bikes?
Moving on.
There is a new racing series theoretically coming out for 2021. Obviously, a lot of the world of motorsports is on standby, just like the world of slow regular sports with balls, I guess, if you're into that kind of thing. But this one is called Extreme E. If you haven't seen this, these are like wild space-looking sci-fi electric vehicles. They are 550 horsepower, you know, 700 Newton meters of torque, which I don't know how much that is. Maybe it's like 30. I don't know. It might be good, but it sounds good.
Sounds good.
Yeah, whatever the hell a Newton meter is. I mean, there's basically what? There's metric, and then there's people who put man on the moon, right? So
there's oh, nice job. There's metric, and then there's America.
America. That's yeah, awesome. So whatever a Newton meter translates into, I mean, do we care? I don't care.
Is there someone listening that can do the quick math? Oh, nope. Okay. Big number. Big
if only we had a device in our pocket that gave us access to all human knowledge. Yeah. But speaking of human knowledge, the cool thing about this is obviously the vehicles are just wild. And if you look at pictures of these things, they look incredible. But the thing that's really making this significant is they've got some really big names that have signed up for this that are going to be building it. So we've got Andretti Autosport. They're everybody knows Mario Andretti, the last American world champion. Obviously Michael and John Andretti have been doing great work since then, in IndyCar and NASCAR. They've done Formula Drift and, you know, Rallycross teams. And they've even been rumored to be looking at a return to Formula One. So for them to commit to Extreme E is a big deal. We've got Chip Ganassi Racing. That's another IndyCar NASCAR team. And those are the first two American teams to commit, but there's seven big teams. Like, you've got Audi, ABT, HWA, which if you're a Mercedes fan, so AMG is kind of the A in AMG. That's HWA, Hans Werner Albrecht. And that's another German team involved. So this is like, actually seems like it's going to happen.
Oh, they've got some really big names behind this. This is no joke. And from a motorsports perspective, you want to have the heart and soul of those who have made it what it is, you know, today and in the past. And so, I'm frankly, I think the vehicles look badass. Like, they look really cool. And so, combined with the fact that you have people that have the pedigree and the heritage of what motorsports has been to say, oh, we're going to take this and run with it, I think there's a lot of things pointing to this could actually be something that people naturally gravitate to, is saying, like, this is just going to be something fun to watch because they put the right pieces in play.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see how it's actually going to be set up, because a lot of this is still open, right? Yeah. They're talking about some stage rallies, which are, you know, like, let's say these things have an 80-mile range, so it's like a 75-mile rally stage or something. You know, and then part of it's going to be how you manage the output of the motors. And then other people are talking about doing these things like stadium trucks, like on a motocross track where they're doing jumps and flips and, well, probably not flips.
I mean, back where the battery's located, that could get quite interesting.
I mean, I'm sure there will be flips, but will they be intentional?
Yeah, will it be intentional, right. Well, I think one thing that's just nuts is even where the courses are located and where they've been billing this as being Greenland, Brazil. I mean, these are some extremely cool places that a lot of people are like, well, we've never seen racing there. How's this going to get pulled off? So I'm intrigued by this. And because it's electrified motorsports, for me, it's even cooler. I'm a big fan of Formula E, but this is just the next step of, if you liked things like Baja, this is like right up your alley.
Yes. Yes. And I you said something interesting there, that Formula E, when it first started, I didn't have a ton of interest in it. And there was when Formula E first started, there was talk about doing a battery swap in the pits. So you'd come in halfway through the race, swap the battery, and keep going. And they did away with that. And what they started doing was they had a second car. So they would literally, the guy would pull in, get out of his car, get into a second car, and finish the race, which I always had kind of a problem with. And they're not doing that now. I guess the technology's come far enough along. Mm-hmm. That they can do the whole race, even in Formula E, they can do the whole race with one car and one battery. But now they're being able to do that off-road, which obviously it's a heavier vehicle. There's two people in it. There's a lot more demanding conditions. I mean, this is a real test of durability for the technology. I think a lot of people who think, you know, a lot of, let's not name Jeep buyers specifically, but Jeep buyers who, you know, kind of poo-poo the idea of hybrids or electric cars as being genuine off-road capable, I think it's going to change a lot of minds.
Well, the other thing is really rad is they have the requirements inside of the team specifications that both a male and female driver have to be on the team. And I think that opens up a window of opportunity to cross over to people that have not been in motorsports. I mean, again, you think of the Danica Patricks that have made, you know, huge changes in what we see in motorsports, you know, for female drivers, this is just another awesome opportunity for that to happen. So I mean, to me, I think that's a really just fun thing they decided to include, that it will just add to a more personalized factor for what people can see themselves in with this type of race series. And it's going to be more than just, oh, look, it's a novelty. No, it's just part of how we do it.
But will people see that, or is the off-road community going to look at that and say, oh, this is like some, like, are they going to get pushback from, you know, we'll say traditionalists or conservatives of that sport?
Yeah, I hope not too. And my 2 cents on that is that the drivers need to be given the opportunity to shut those types of people up.
Well, you're right, because they're going to be, we don't know how it's going to go, but we'll know that there's men and women in the same car, and we'll be able to see their times, right?
Oh yeah, totally. No, again, so, but again, we can speculate like anybody till we're all blue in the face as to how that's going to happen or how people will respond. But you know, at the end of the day, it's, you know, what actions speak louder than words at that point. And so anybody that has an opinion on it, they'll just have to, you know, eat their hat if someone comes along who's not a male and dominates. Extreme E is going to be one hell of a race series.
So Volkswagen claims the ID.4 will be able to drive up to 300 miles between charges, and its SUV crossover shape and attractive styling should make it desirable. Matthew?
I think that's accurate on the latter part. I think that I'm disappointed that they're only bringing out just the ID.4 because they've shown a lot, but I think the ID.4 is going to be popular here in the States for sure. It's a Model Y competitor, no doubt. But
did they say that they're not bringing anything else? I mean, realistically, the only company right now that is selling sedans is Tesla.
Yeah, and oddly enough, they're selling them pretty well.
But again, you know, we're talking about a company that they have figured out that like secret sauce, right? Where they're selling it as a premium brand.
Yeah.
Where even if you and I know that a Model E or whatever can be had for about 40 grand, which is about the same price as a Honda Accord touring model, you know, you roll up with a Tesla, people are going to think you're like some rich guy.
That's the oddity of it too. I mean, if you have an S or an X, that's obviously, you probably spent 100K on that thing because it's got all the bells and whistles. But yeah, Model 3 is different. But the problem is, to your point, it became a premium brand that started like filtering itself down into the mainstream. You know, brands like Volkswagen and the Volkswagen group as a group and what they put out with respect to the Taycan and the e-tron and now ID.4 is collectively they're putting their best effort in, but it's more than their best effort. I think they're dead serious. I think the ID.4 is going to be really popular. If it hits 300 miles on a single charge, I think that'll also be great. The next question will be, that's just, it's on a single charge. Is that, you know, what does it do at highway speeds? What does it do in certain weather? That will be what obviously American buyers are going to want to know first is, can I take this on the highway at 85 miles an hour and get 300 miles? The answer is probably no. In the same way, you can't do that in any EV right now.
That's an interesting point because it's the question is not going to be whether or not it works 90% of the time. The question is going to be whether it's going to work for somebody on that road trip and anything else. I mean, you know, if your car breaks down once a year, and I mean like breaks down, leaves you on the side of the road, you're going to think that car is a piece of junk. But if you think about it, 365 days a year, one day out of the year, it's broken down. That's what, 99.7% effectiveness.
Yep.
But that's what you're going to remember is that like 0.5% of the time that it left you on the side of the road. And
I think that's how American buyers, they've proven to, again, how they approach buying cars is they have a mindset of what is that 0.01% use case. You know, is it when I want to tow that thing? Is it when I want to drive to grandma's that's 700 miles away? Is it, you know, and is it when the zombie apocalypse hits? And so EVs that are coming, like the ID.4, they're meeting a lot of the criteria that people have been asking about. Is more room, put more people in, put more stuff in. Does it have the range? The thing to back up the ID.4's success, in my opinion, is going to be how can you trust the infrastructure that's out there to use it for going beyond the city? And, you know, and again, you've got the infrastructure that's coming in, you know, Electrify America, they've been growing their network like crazy. Other networks like ChargePoint, EDGO, GreenLots, Blink, they're all building out infrastructure that inevitably will support these types of vehicles that drivers are going to need to trust. I think that Volkswagen's putting together a good product line. It's the next step is going to be, okay, what happens when you get behind the wheel and you want to go somewhere?
Will people buy it?
I think it's an attractive vehicle. Honestly, I think they've done a really good job with their ID platforms. And frankly, they did a good job of translating what was the conceptual look of these vehicles into production models.
I agree with that. I mean, I agree with that. I actually think it's better looking than the concepts, which I almost never say. But it's starting at 35,000. Let's say realistically it's 45,000. It's competing head to head with a Tesla. And it's almost like when Volkswagen, 20 years ago or whatever, 15 years ago, they had the Phaeton, right? Which was essentially a Bentley with a VW badge. And, there were people who bought that who understood what it was as an engineering piece. But it wasn't the success that everybody thought it was going to be. It didn't really cannibalize any Mercedes S-Class sales. It didn't take anything away from the BMW 7 Series. I think if a Volkswagen is priced next to a Tesla, I don't understand why people would buy the Volkswagen. Am I a terrible person?
No, I don't think you're again, then it gets back into the brand recognition of what are they getting themselves into, I think what Volkswagen's doing a pretty good job of is saying we're trying to turn a page. They also have a lot to do from a brand perspective to change perception. A big part of why they've invested heavily into electrification is because of Dieselgate. Let's just be honest, right? And so they've also shown that they are putting a lot of effort into the R&D and making products that are not just, okay, we slapped this together because we got our wrists slapped. I think they've actually put out some pretty damn good products. So I think ID4 will be in the same vein of that. But to your point, when it's alongside the competition being something like a Model Y, what does the Model Y have that the ID4 is not going to have? That's going to be the catch. I mean, is Volkswagen really going to be able to embrace over-the-air updates for an ID4 in the same way that Tesla can do for a Model Y? But is that what an average consumer is going to be shopping for? Are they going to understand the difference? These are things that Volkswagen is going to need to address.
Yeah, but even if you talk about electric vehicles, I mean, they've got a long way to go to get to, let's say, 10% of the market.
Right. I think, and that's the catch too, is how many people are shopping for cars in a way that it's as specialized as an early EV adopter might have been shopping. Those people that bought EVs 10 years ago, even maybe 5 years ago, they were a different mindset of buyer. I think Volkswagen is already proving that they're trying to figure out how to get to that conversation about their new products that are, it's not electric and different, it's a Volkswagen. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it is a well-engineered product. I think that some of the advertising and promo pieces they put out, I think, speak to that. But again, we'll see how, I mean, even like the button on like one of their vehicles that said like, press to start engine or something like that. And I remember thinking to myself like, well, some people are going to get up in arms about that, but like that are EV folks. But I think average people are going to go, I guess I press this button to start the engine or something, like, because they don't know how it works. They just want to have a vehicle that fits the three kids in the back. They can go to soccer and make sure it doesn't, die on the way home.
They don't know how their regular car works. I mean, that was one thing that I learned, in my years at the dealership working in the service drive, 12 years in the service department, people have no idea what's going on in their car.
You're kidding.
They have no concept.
I mean, every time it's like you talk about displacement, you talk about compression.
Nope.
I mean, yeah. This is why blinker fluid is actually a possible product. I think the ID4 is going to be a vehicle that if the price hits the way they're saying, if they can keep the numbers up, and frankly, if they can help the dealers understand how to explain how to use a car that is electrified, I think that they'll sell these things like crazy. But there's still going to be that consternation inside of the showroom of, I got to get you to buy a Volkswagen because you're standing here. So if the ID4 isn't your cup of tea, how do I get you behind the wheel of a Volkswagen? There's still going to be issues like that hanging out inside the dealer mindset that I think, might hinder the ID4.
I don't think they're going to sell. I love the ID4. I don't think
they're
going to sell.
I'll take a bet against that. Well, I do. I do think it's going to sell. But again, we can talk about that more next week or, hey, when it comes out on the Electrify podcast. So, well, hey, that's it for this week. Thanks for joining the Electrify podcast. Be sure to check us out next week for more information about e-mobility and electrification. We'll see you again next time. That's a wrap for this episode of the Electrify podcast. Be sure to find out more information about Electrify Expo on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn to get information on all things e-mobility. We'll see you next week.